as I was reading about you and as I hear you talking about yourself and then how you seem to be walking in this direction, and it just seems to me that sort of like you had this feeling that there was something more for you in what you were doing.
Well, I think I've always been that kind of a person, that I always feel like there's something else to discover. I've always needed to explore and to grow and to do different things. I knew at a very early age that I could never be happy, let's say, being the principal clarinet player of a symphony orchestra. And I love symphonic music, and it's gorgeous, and that's an incredible job to have, you know, and an incredible role is to be a musician in a symphony orchestra. But for me, I always felt that I did have these other sides of myself that needed to be expressed, so that would be very limiting for me personally. I don't say it's a limiting thing for everybody. I think, you know, wow, it's a great thing to do. But for me personally, it would be too narrow of a road. And also at this juncture, I was also thinking, wow, well, people sometimes will have a perception of me that all I do is play klezmer music. In the next March, I'll be doing a project playing the Mozart Clarinet Concerto on the first half of a concert, and then a whole set of like klezmer-inspired pieces on the second half. And that's really like doing, you know, brain surgery at intermission. You know, I have to have a brain transplant to be able to pull that off, because it's just almost two different human beings. And then with this new project that I'm doing called The Big Picture, I took music from iconic films that all relate to Judaism. So that relates to my story. And it's really about a search for identity, but that's what I've always been doing, is trying to connect to the past, but having one foot in the past and one foot in the future to tell these stories. So through this film music, which is a kind of a common language for me and so many people, I think I'm able to tell that story about the search for identity and express that also as a common search. It's not just my search for my, as an assimilated Jewish American, but everyone has that desire and that search. Wow, my grandparents came from Sweden and they were pioneers, or my great-great-grandmother was from Sicily, you know, who knows, or my great-great-grandparents were slaves and they were forced to come to the United States, or were Native Americans. You know, we all have that heritage, and that's so important for all of us to connect with. I think it feels really good to connect with those things.
Well, tell us about this concert that you're going to be presenting with the WCF Symphony, and you have some different connections that you're going to be doing in this with various styles and kinds of music. So tell us about that.
Well, there will be pieces of music that are klezmer-inspired. Also, one piece which I call Klezmer a la Bechet, which is a tribute to Sidney Bechet, my teacher who I never met. And that has a kind of a funk feel to it. So there's more of that side of things. And then there is one movement from the Dreams and Prayers of Isaac the Blind. So that aspect of combining contemporary classical music with klezmer music is there, and also a piece by Robert Starrer, who was born in Austria, fled the Nazis in the late 30s, and went through what was then called Palestine, and then ended up in the United States, probably in the early 1950s or late 1940s. And then became an eminent professor of composition at Brooklyn College. And he wrote a lovely piece, Rikudim Dances. And right before he died, he sent me an arrangement just for strings and clarinet. So I think that's the version we'll be doing. And so I think there's classical music, there's klezmer music, there's improvising, touching on jazz and maybe on funk a little bit. And so it kind of is a little tour through my world.
Well, tell us about the piece that you're opening with and Elstein. And it sounds like this is just sort of something that he put together himself.
Well, Abraham Elstein was one of the great composers for the Yiddish theater. And there was a very famous film, Yiddel Mitten Fiddle, with basically, would roughly translate as the little Jew with her violin or something. And the star of that movie was Molly Picon, who was one of the great stars of the Yiddish theater. So Elstein wrote a lot of that music, and he wrote songs that became hits. And the Yiddish theater was on Second Avenue. And again, it was this great wave of immigration, late 19th century, early 20th centuries, that started big Yiddish theater. And I think it was quite vigorous, probably from the end of the 19th century through about the 1940s. And then it died off as people assimilated. But these newly arrived immigrants were starving to hear the language and to hear songs. And that became a big part of American culture. The Broadway of Yiddish theater was Second Avenue, probably between about 14th Street and Houston Street on Second Avenue. So that was a big cultural center for Jewish people pretty much for the first half of the 20th century.
And so this is one of the pieces that he put together and orchestrated it and did all of that himself.
Yeah, I think there was another orchestrator, a man named Richard Heyman, who did the orchestration. But I think Elstein was also capable of doing his own orchestrations. I believe he went to Juilliard and he wrote a piano concerto that's apparently lost. But he was a serious composer. So he created a body of work, but he wrote for the Yiddish theater and wrote hits. And so the piece is very deeply connected to the klezmer tradition, but you hear almost the showbiz razzmatazz in it a little bit too.
Well, what I loved about him is that he also had a radio show.
Oh.
Which is so cool that he had this radio show and he brought in all these famous cantors, which I think was a really cool idea. I wonder if those shows are still available, or, you know, they made a recording of them, or they're available, you know.
I am not sure about that, but there must be some air checks that are out there.
Well, tell us a little bit more about Starr, because I was reading about him too, and one of his teachers made him study the oud, or however you say that instrument. And it kind of made me think about you and some of your collaborations that you've had.
Well, Starr was very marked by his time in Palestine. He wrote a lovely autobiography. And he talked about being there and not only hearing Yiddish music, but hearing Arabic music. And so there you are, the kind of idea that music could bring people together, that he, as a Jewish person, was hanging out with Arabic musicians and learning music with them and playing music and exchanging. And I think, you know, always when you hear a story about that kind of cultural exchange, it's wonderful. I mean, Starr did not come from a Yiddish culture. He came from a Viennese Jewish culture that was very Germanic, and they were very, very proud of that. And in fact, you know, you hear these crazy stories, like during the Holocaust, of the Nazis coming to the door to take people or take their possessions, and the patriarch of the house showing up in his Austrian army uniform or the German army uniform and saying, "I fought in World War I for my country. How dare you come here and try to take me?" But eventually, of course, they were all taken or they had to flee. And Starr talked about seeing Hitler come in 1938 and seeing the people out on the streets. And, you know, right after that, Jewish people were beat up, and shops desecrated, and then people started to lose their jobs and eventually were taken to concentration camps. So anyway, Starrer was coming from this very, very Austrian, Germanic culture, and then to come to Palestine, and he probably came in contact with a lot of Yiddish speakers. So he came into contact with this Eastern European Jewish world, which was very different from his, as well as this Arabic world. And so that really marked him and changed him. So when he wrote this piece, the Rikudim, the dances, it has, you can hear an Arabic influence and you hear the Yiddish influence, and it is all put together in a very Germanic way. So it's all those worlds come together.
And how is that pronounced then? Is it Klezmer or?
It's Klezmer.
Klezmer, okay.
So basically those are two Hebrew words, Kli and Zemer, which mean vessel of song. And those two words blended together became a Yiddish word, Klezmer, Klezmer.
Well, give us a little bit more of background then about this Argentinian composer and this work that you did with the Kronos Quartet.
The piece from the concert is the movement from the Dreams and Prayers, which is called Kvakarat. And the Kvakarat is actually a setting of a prayer from the Jewish New Year, from Rosh Hashanah. And it's the Shepherd's Prayer. So Osvaldo did a setting where you hear pan flutes, kind of pan flutes imitated in the strings, and it has a very pastoral sound. So it really is the world of the shepherd. And there was a whole thing that in Romania, they said that a lot of the shepherds were influenced by the cantors, by the Jewish shepherds, were influenced by the cantors, and the cantors were influenced by the singing of the shepherds. So there was a kind of a never-ending circle. It was hard to know which was the chicken and which was the egg from that style. So the Kvakarat is the third movement of the Dreams and Prayers. But Osvaldo had this idea that the Dreams and Prayers of Isaac the Blind would become a kind of epic journey through the three major languages of Ashkenazic Judaism. So the first movement, there's a prelude and then a first movement. And that whole section of the piece has an ancient quality, chanting, praying. So that he considers almost in Aramaic, metaphorically. And then the second movement is more like klezmer music, so he considers that movement to be in Yiddish. And the third movement is a prayer from the Torah, and so he considers that movement to be in Hebrew. So you have Aramaic, Yiddish, and Hebrew. And that's the progression through the Dreams and Prayers. So in the concert, we've done the version in Hebrew.
And so the clarinet then takes on the role of the shepherd or the cantor?
The clarinet takes on the role of the cantor. And in fact, Osvaldo first composed the Kvakarat for cantor and string quartet as a movement by itself. And so the piece played in the concert is actually a restoration of that original version, because there is a kind of more turbulent ending. So it works as a standalone piece.
You said this was very powerful. So why do you feel this is so powerful?
Well, the piece begins in a very tranquil way, and then it builds and it builds, and it gets to a moment of ecstatic supplication where you really feel like the cantor is communicating with the divine powers. And whether you're religious or not, that energy is so intense of anybody in touch with the unexplainable. And so I think that's what happens in the Kvakarat, and you get to this place of just this, yes, intense ecstatic supplication. And that's very powerful. And then it ends with this very almost violent outburst, and it will definitely leave the audience in a particular state of mind.
Well, tell us about the second portion of the concert, where a lot of these pieces are either your original piece or they're settings of pieces. So tell us about those.
Well, a lot of the traditional klezmer pieces that I set, I've just set them in very simple arrangements with a spirit of kind of folk music. One of the pieces, called The Wedding Dance, though I actually brought in a little bit of a playful element, because I asked the orchestra to erase parts. In other words, they're looking at the score, they're see beat one, beat two, beat three, beat four. But I say to them, play beat one and maybe play beat four. And then maybe don't even play the second measure. And then come in on the third measure. So the music rolls along as normal, but they just play what they want. And so what happens is that every time it creates a different piece of music, it sort of gives the orchestra a chance to improvise a little bit without improvising, but they get to choose. I'm playing all the time, so there's never an awkward silence. The thing is going along, and if there was an awkward silence, I would fill it in immediately. So I'm just playing, and they just sort of fill it in. So it's sort of like a blurry picture, and then we play the tune. It's a traditional tune, and the second time we play it, and we play it as written, a little bit faster, and so it snaps into focus suddenly, and it's just a traditional wedding dance. So that's kind of fun. And then there's a piece called the Hacer Bulgar, which means the hot Bulgar, just a fiery dance. And there's a piece called Der Gassenigen, which is the street song. Yeah, and then I'm doing my arrangement of Klezmer a la Bechet, my own piece. And so I think that's it.
And you also have this synagogue wail for solo clarinet.
Oh, well, the synagogue wail is a kind of amalgam of all my influences in a solo piece, and there's circular breathing, and there's all kinds of tricks and quarter tones and crazy sounds, and I don't want to give away too much, but it's a piece that people really connect to.
So Jason said that you have like this wild collection of clarinets and mouthpieces and all sorts of interesting things. Are you going to be bringing those out?
No, I left them at home.
Oh, shoot.
I just have my clarinet. Basically, for me, with instruments, the very simple thing is that for each style of music, I have a different mouthpiece. So for klezmer music and for improvised music, I have one mouthpiece, which gives me a very particular sound. And then for classical music, I have a whole other mouthpiece. So when I play, it feels different. And that's important for me, because then that grounds me and I know where I am. I know what style I'm playing. And also the klezmer mouthpiece gives me a lot more flexibility so that I can really sculpt and mold the sound to my liking.
Well, is there anything else that you'd like to say, or that you would like to have people know about you, or that you would like to just express?
Well, I think I touched on it before. What I would like to express is I think there's not enough dialogue in the world today, that we're not listening to each other enough. We're not talking, we're not discussing, we're not sharing enough. And I think we all need to do that, whatever side of the political spectrum one is on, whatever religion, socioeconomic group. I think there's a lot more talking we need to do and sharing, because that's really important. It's very easy for us to dismiss people we disagree with and to laugh at them, but to actually say, you know, we need to talk, because I think a lot of people are unhappy now, and it's important for us to try to figure out how to be happy. And, you know, I also hope that people can come and hear me play and enjoy themselves and find some joy and find some relief in music. And hopefully that's a positive. I think that's the weapon that we have as artists in the world, is to try to help people find a way to be better to each other.